This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and welcome to the Digital Guardian podcast, where we have conversations about keeping our tamariki and young people safer online. I'm Sean Lyon from NetSafe, and in this series, I'll be joined by experts, professionals and academics to talk about navigating digital safety and well-being and how to support your child to be safer online with confidence and connection. Today, we're talking about connection and distraction. Many parents worry that screens are pulling families apart, that phones are stealing attention, that connection is slipping away. But is that the whole story? What does real connection actually look like in a digitally saturated world? And how do we protect it without creating guilt, shame, and unrealistic expectations? Today, we're exploring what the research tells us about connection, distraction, and what small, realistic changes can make a big difference at home. I'm joined by Cara Swit, Associate Professor at the University of Canterbury, where she leads the Relationship Lab in the School of Health Sciences. We're also joined by Anna Mowat, Founder and Director of The Real Collective and Real Parents. Anna is an experienced writer, advisor, and creative strategist, and specializes in supporting whānau and communities through innovative approaches to well-being. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the idea of connection. So, you know, a simple sounding word, but for many, I would imagine, actually quite hard to describe. So in a world that's constantly pulling our attention away, what does connection look like for families today? And I want to ask you first, Anna, you spend a lot of time with parents and whānau. When they talk about connection, what are they actually craving? What do you feel is most at risk for parents in a busy, digitally immersed family life?
Yeah, that's a really good point, hey, because we're up against it as parents, aren't we? And, you know, there's work and there's housework and there's gardening and then there's, you know, all the things, finding the spare coin down the back of the couch for that thing at school or whatever's needed. And then, so, you know, we're kind of desperately time poor, and so we know that our technology is supporting us in that. And saying that, connection looks like how was your day? It looks like sitting down and sharing kai together. It looks like supporting them with their, you know, getting dressed when they're little, and supporting them with their homework as they get older. It's the tiny present moments that we get throughout our day that we look for and we support through, I want to say connection there, but you support through kind of allowing ourselves to just be really present. Yeah.
Thank you. Cara, from your perspective, from a research perspective, how do you define connection in early childhood and parent-child interactions?
So early childhood, and we're talking like infancy, as soon as a child is born, actually, even prenatally, we see that connection's developing between child and parent. And we can see this when parents, caregivers, talk to the belly, pregnant baby inside. And those are moments, those very early days, connection is happening already. And then during infancy, we see the same sorts of things. It's often that as infants start to be able to visually see the features of their caregivers, and that eye contact and that back and forth, we call it in the literature serve and return. So we give something to our child and they return it back with it. So we might mimic something that the child is doing and they give it a goo goo gaga kind of noise, and it's this interaction back and forth. We see it in exchange smiles. Those little, Anna said, the micro moments, those are often some of the most powerful times in which connection is built. The smiles, the just the presence, and sitting in that for moments. Those are the real beautiful things of connection I kind of think about. And then, of course, as children get older, connection looks different. As children get older and they develop more autonomy and they want to be, they still absolutely want to be connected with their parents because that's what they tell us. But what that looks like, sounds like, and feels like can look quite different. They often want a bit more of their own space and autonomy, but they want their parents to continue and their caregivers to continue to check in on them in lots of different ways.
There's that beautiful saying, hey, do your eyes light up when your child enters a room? Because that's what they're looking for. Isn't it just delicious? I have to remember that sometimes.
And I think sometimes actually that makes me think of when I talk to parents, sometimes they talk about that feeling of picking up their child from kindergarten or from school or from after school care, that it is that initial moment of kind of seeing your child and that's a connection point, and just things just feel different from whatever has happened throughout the day, the busyness and etc. That's connection.
Yeah, recognizing that you've missed each other and you're pleased to see each other again.
Yes,
Yeah. Like those moments of play, the peekaboo when they're little, the, running around on the lawn when they're older. It could be, with our teenagers, it will be, I don't know, sitting on the end of their bed at the end of the day to say, hey,
Co-regulation, we call it as well. The opportunities, when things are tough, our kids, our tamariki have big feelings across development, and being able to co-regulate with them, recognizing that their feelings matter, and what they're feeling is valid. And that you can be their safe person, you can be that person, their biggest cheerleader, to support them in whatever's going on for them.
Yeah, that's a really good point, isn't it? Because there's the busyness of our days, but there's also allowing ourselves the time, well, allowing ourselves the ability to be able to say, do you know what? I'm at about a 2 out of 10. How are you doing?
And that's great for teaching our kids how to regulate themselves, modeling that as adults, and showing how we manage the big feelings and our own connections with other people as well. We are the models for our young people. They look to us.
Do you think sometimes parents are a little hard on themselves in terms of that connection? Because hearing some of the things that you described there, do you think there are you ever surprised by the differences between what a parent might think connection is because of what they've been told by a book that they've read or a friend that's bragging about just how connected they are or the great rituals that they have at home versus what they're actually doing? Do you think there might be an unnecessary self-beat up going on in some places?
Absolutely.
So
And even for me.
and me as well. We're both parents, so we have our own lived experience of this. I was actually telling Anna about a project that we've just finished collecting data where we actually talked to parents about their feelings of guilt that they experience in the context of technological disruptions, but also non-tech stuff. So, when someone knocks at the door and you're halfway through playing with your child, that's a non-tech, just that's an example of a non-tech disruption, or the kettle going off or the oven beeping. Those are all non-tech disruptions that have been part of parenting forever. But we've actually never spoken about them. And so we've spoken a lot to parents about the types of feelings that come up for them when they want to spend time with their child, but they feel so oh, and to continue to build that connection, but they feel so overwhelmed by all the things that they have to do in their day to keep the household running. And I think some of this has coincided with, some people may or may not have heard of this term of intensive parenting. It's very big on social media, and it kind of goes through ebbs and flows, don't you think, around how much talk and how much of a hot topic it is. But it's this idea of, as a parent today, I should be spending every waking moment with my child. And if I'm not, then I'm not being a good parent. And so I think a lot of the guilt that parents sometimes feel is what they are exposed to in social media, what they're exposed to in the narratives, in the conversations that they're having when they're having coffee with their mates, and other parents. And they're not necessarily healthy feelings, right? Parenting's tough. It is so tough and it's really hard. And parents don't need more negativity and more things on their plate to make them feel guilty.
We're the first generation, too, of parents that are going through our kids having screens, hey? And so we haven't, we've got no model in which to, use as a basis, and I think because we're finding our way in this, and because we're often told it's bad, not good, da 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 da, and that's the kind of the norm. That we can't help but feel, guilty for that or ashamed for that. And maybe it is too that we're not being that honest with each other about how much time we're spending on tech and our children are spending on screens as well. And compounded by, I think, potentially our own parents having some judgment of us around that. Thank you very much, Mum and Dad. And but then there's also what we're seeing, as you say, on social media, those white couched parents that look like they've got it all together because there's no washing to be seen in the background.
We don't discount the fact that digital media and technology does have negative impacts, and there's risks, absolutely. But the reality of parenting in a digitally saturated world requires more of a nuanced conversation. And we need to talk about the fact that because parents feel so overwhelmed by everything that they have to do day in and day out just to keep the household running, that digital media and technology serves as a very effective babysitter. And it serves as entertainment to allow parents reprieve, but also to allow parents to get jobs done. And that is the reality. And so I think when parents don't, and I think that's more of the conversation I would like to see in our communities and in social media more broadly, opposed to my child, they don't need to have screen time. I don't need to have screen time, and I'm getting everything done. Because I don't think that's a reality for many parents.
It's unrealistic to expect that we can do life without tech now. But I wonder whether or not the greater conversation in that is about well-being, well-being of parents. Like, what do I need to be able to feel good and function well as a parent? And yes, that does mean some reprieve from parenting and being able to feel on top of things. And then it also means, finding, moments of connection, joy, all of that. And then the same for our children as well. What do they need? Or tell me, what do we need as a family in order to feel good, function well, including having time on screens?
So let's shift to the other side of this, distraction. We often blame screens, but distraction is bigger than that. Cara, you've researched what's called technoference. What is that, and what does that actually look like in everyday family life?
Technoference in its definition, particularly within kind of the research space, but also one that I think is accessible to a general audience, is interruptions and disruptions, essentially when I'm interacting with another person, and these interruptions are technology. So it can be a notification that you receive while you're playing with your child and you attend to it. So it breaks that serve and return interaction that I referred to when we're talking about connection a little bit earlier. And so we see this phenomena of technoference now. It's very, very common across the world, not just in Aotearoa New Zealand, in the US, in Europe, everywhere. We've got research from all countries. One thing that I want to also emphasize around technoference is that it's not, I think sometimes there's this perception that if technology is always interrupting the interactions that I'm having with other people, then I must be a heavy user of media. But actually, that's not the case. We see that, checking our phones when we receive a notification or receiving a phone call, we feel the need to attend to those things immediately, whether we are in a conversation or an interaction or not. And it just becomes habitual, almost like we don't even know that we're doing it. And so it is now kind of part of the normal interactions that we have day to day, whether you're a heavy user of devices or not. So disruptions are more of the ones that if you are constantly attending to those notifications and those phone calls, over time, those what might be very small interruptions turn into something much, much bigger. And you've now taught your child that actually attending to these things is going to take more of your time than the interaction. Whereas the distraction and the interruption are often much more micro and much more momentary. And so you attend to your distraction or interruption, but then you go through a recovery phase with your child where you are able to pick up where you left off. You're able to re-engage and reconnect because that our kids are so resilient, aren't they? That reconnection is so, so important for parent-child relationship quality. And so, distractions and interruptions are completely normal and very common in family life, but that recovery is really, really critical. How do you pick up and re-engage with your child after you've engaged in that distraction? Sometimes some of the examples that we give is, Mummy's just got to do this for 5 minutes. I've just got to respond to this email, but then I'm back with you. And when I say I'm back with you, it has been the 5 minutes. I'm back with you, and now you've got my attention. And that recovery and that reconnection is really, really, really critical.
I like the saying it out loud because because it's kind of because everyone's clear. You've communicated what's going to happen, and then there's a recommitment to something that, what we know about children is that if we forget, they'll hold us to us.
And I was just about, so our young kids, so all of the work that I've done with young children about putting their voices in the center of what we know, they tell us the same thing, Anna, that they want to know. They feel so much better when they know that mum, dad, caregiver is going to be available in 5 minutes. They can regulate themselves and hold out for that 5 minutes, knowing that they're going to have your attention then.
And then it's kind of it acts as a and then when you're brought back into it, after you've disclosed what's going to happen, communicated that, and then brought back into it, you get the chance to kind of reset, don't you? Oh, and apologize. Like, I'm so sorry that that interrupted our time together. I was really enjoying myself. Let's go back to this, Rather
Anna,
than,
in
sorry.
Anna, in your work with parents, how do you see distraction or disruption, which sounds like it may be more impactful? How do you see that creeping in to family life? Are parents aware of it? What do you think parents are struggling most with in this space from your experience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they recognize this for sure. And so there's the guilt associated to it. I mean, I'm thinking about myself and this as Cara's talking. And, when my children say mum more than once to get my attention, mum, mum, Mom, put your phone down. Also, when I'm kind of half listening, that's quite a common thing, isn't it? And I know that, parents talk about that a lot. Like, there is this distraction because of what's going on, but they know they need to listen to what's, in front of them. What else can it be? It can be, they're watching, agreeing to the family movie, hey, and then everyone's actually also on a device.
Because who wants to watch Frozen for the 30th time?
That's exactly right. And oh, there's that other one too that has happened to me, and parents talk about where they're on their phone or screen and the child's trying to show them something, and so they push it over the screen
Oh,
to
wow.
show you. And so all of that is us as parents recognizing that our children are sending up little flares, aren't they, to let us know that they wanna connect with us. And sometimes we can put that aside and be ready for it and apologize and say, I'm really sorry, I was distracted, which is a great way to come to it. And then other times, we kind of let it slide, but we hold that thing sometimes too. I remember my kids they played this incredible game once where they decided that they were going to play me, and it was like the worst of me that I had ever seen. It was me with an overstuffed satchel in a rush on the phone yelling at the children that we have to go.
It sounds like me.
And that was their kind of interpretation of me, and it was an incredible mirror.
But I think that's one
Even
thing I
as you were
wanted to
describing
say.
that game, go ahead.
So one of the things when you said that, Arno, and described that, I think that kind of just reminds me of the fact that we often talk about distractions and immediately think about tech. But actually, there are so many other things on our plate as parents that are non-tech. Like, I've got that meeting scheduled at 10 o'clock, but I've got to do drop-off first, and I've got to pick up something first. I've got to print off something for the meeting first. There's so many other things that we're working towards and other distractions that also need to be recognized, I think.
We've mentioned the sort of word guilt a couple of times, that there's an element of that in it. I mean, but I think there is. And to your point about the technology version of this versus the real world knock at the door, it does feel to me like people feel a little worse about the notification that comes in the form of a bleep with a little red circle next to it. Versus a doorbell at the front door. And in so many of these things, guilt is such a difficult part to get over. And it also stops us talking about these things more openly.
So I think one of the things that's come quite strongly in the research that I've done with parents around, particularly around guilt, is this concept of agency. That, and I want to state here that we need to be doing more in terms of holding big tech accountable for algorithmic driven features that keep our parents connected to their phones unintentionally. That time, I'm sure we can all think of moments where we go on our phone to check one thing that we intend to take 30 seconds, and before we know it, that 5 minutes that has gone, and then 20 minutes. And we've checked what we not needed to, but we're also doing other things as well that we hadn't intended to. And that's really taking agency away from parents.
And unintentionally in terms of our behavior, but intentionally in terms of big tech companies.
Absolutely. And so one of the things I always find myself saying to parents and reminding them is that the fact that you have stayed on your phone for 20 minutes, even though you only intended to be on there for a minute or so, is not a reflection of your inability to control yourself. Because I think there's this natural tendency for us as adults to internalize it. Oh my goodness, it's all me. I'm the reason why can't I control myself? Why can't I stop using it when I intended to, without them actually realizing that these platforms are designed to keep them connected, to keep them distracted? And so really empowering parents to understand that and to take their agency back. And we found it's actually quite powerful when parents actually understand the various features that are online, in various platforms to continue to capture their attention, how much they start to kind of rebel, try to rebel against that. And I think that's really empowering for parents.
So this is such an interesting point, and easier said than done, I think, for most of us to rein back from the devices and apps that are designed to, primarily to capture our attention. So what's within a parent's control right now? If a parent wants to make one small change this week, where could they start?
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually. And I love the word rebel. Like, one of the things that we do talk about with parents is actually rebelling against this. And rebellion looks like having a family quiddit around how we want to be using our screens or what we've noticed. Hey, look, what I've noticed is this creep of us using our devices a lot. And bringing ourselves into that rather than it just being about our kids. I know that teens get a bad rap around this too, but often we're doing the modelling. Rebelling looks like, having times when you don't have screens with you. So it might be just at tea time, it might be, after a certain time at night, or it might be in the morning time where you're having breakfast together. Just having some little kind of rules around that. And I think too, coming back to what are your values, like sometimes we get so lost in parenting because parenting happens right in front of our face a lot. And we're just sort of responding, aren't we? Sometimes reacting. And I think it's, having the chance to reflect on whether or not you're living by the values that you want to, that are important to you. And that's again, a conversation. It's kind of like what's important to us as a family. There's heaps of downloads online about all the different types of values, and then choose three that are really important to you and how you could live those out, including with the use of in tech and stuff like that. Just going back to guilt too, because actually guilt can be a really positive emotion, hey. Guilt is the thing that makes us apologize when we've done wrong, even though we don't want to. So what it does is it propels us to make good again or do right again. And so we can use that emotion just to reflect and go, wow, what do I, what's going to support me and what's going to support our family in this? And again, I keep coming back to this, having that conversation, which is I've been feeling guilty about how much time I've been using tech, and I'm wondering how we can come to this differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I am just immediately thinking about, the narrative and the research is we're so focused on screen time, so quantity, right? How much we've shifted now to quality. And it's the same thing in parenting, and kind of navigating this, right? Actually, our children would prefer quality, our connection, our time and our attention and the quality of that, opposed to quantity and it being fragmented, with disruptions and interruptions and distractions. And so when you said, Anna, finding tech-free times as well, like thinking about high value, high impact times that align with the values of your whānau. And so for us in our family, dinner time is the one time every day we all come together and there's no devices because that works for us. And that's 20 minutes that I know is high quality time. And that's our cup filling kind of thing for the day. And I think without that, all of our whānau, all of the people in my family, We just wouldn't have that same connection. And so I think in terms of thinking about realistically what can parents and families sustain, it's not about finding tech-free times throughout the entire day. It's finding these micro moments. And sometimes it's just 5 minutes. Sometimes it's the prioritizing the bedtime routine and being fully present. It's about making it manageable for your whānau and that something that aligns with your values. Recognizing there's no one size fits all. Every family is different. We need to move away from these social comparisons.
Yeah, that's a good point. Set yourself up for success.
So a lot of people talk about going on a digital detox. What do you think about that as a strategy?
Don't do the entire overhaul of for 12 hours.
Well, actually, the research shows that digital detoxes are ineffective because they actually create an enormous amount of stress and anxiety because our societies and our communities are immersed and require us to use digital media and technology,
It's like
right?
the day you go to work with and forget your phone,
Or
like
your
nightmare.
laptop. How do I do my work? So digital, we know these digital tech detoxes actually just, they're not sustainable, they're not realistic, and they're actually ineffective. And so, yes, I think finding things that are much more sustainable and realistic for your family is going to lead to success, and then you're going to feel much better about yourself as well.
If you were asked to offer parents a single reassurance about connection and distraction, what would
Yeah.
it be?
I'd say you are not alone in this. We're all faced with the same challenge, but I want to reassure you that you matter. You're the most important person to your child. And whatever moments you can give them in your day to connect, have fun, find joy, really have an enormous impact.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
And I'm going to go back to what I kind of said, and this is for the connection and the distraction piece. But it's find 5 intentional minutes in your day to be present and engage in meaningful connection. It's about being responsive to your child. It's going to lead you to something that can be done every single day so it's sustainable. It's very meaningful and it's going to create a pattern of behavior that becomes part of the whānau routine, which is essentially what we want. It's the rebelling for me of, yeah, we're going to acknowledge that digital media and tech is not going anywhere, but I'm going to intentionally set this time aside every single day to be connected, to be present. And that's going to be, I think, it's going to be so critically important.
A warm thank you to Anna and Cara for joining NetSafe today. What's been made clear is that connection doesn't require perfection. It doesn't require eliminating screens. It requires intention. Small, consistent moments of presence, even 5 minutes, can have a powerful impact. If you'd like practical support navigating screen time, distraction, and digital well-being in your family, the NetSafe Digital Guardian Guide offers tools, conversation starters, and guidance to help you build confident, connected digital parenting habits. So jump online and head to digitalguardian.guide. You don't have to navigate this alone. NetSafe has supported people across New Zealand to have safe and positive online experiences for over 25 years. You can contact our helpline for free, confidential advice and support on any online issue you or your whānau may be experiencing. Call 0508 638 723, text NetSafe to 4282, email help@netsafe.org.nz, or contact us via our website, netsafe.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.